Will you hold my hand, Molly?
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Molly Glover, Nick Glover, and Tim Wick.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks. Geeks Without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we're live at Die Laughing 3 with Ariel Leaf. We talk about theater, her new baby, and all sorts of other great stuff about atheism and paganism.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I am your host, Molly Glover, joined as always by my co-hosts, Tim Wick.
Hi, I'm Tim Wick.
And Nick Glover.
That's me.
And today we are recording live at Die Laughing 3. And we are here with very special guest, Ariel Leaf. Hello, Ariel.
Glad to be here.
Yay.
She is a thespian.
She is. Ariel, you are well known on the theater scene. I actually just friended you on Facebook and saw we had like 49 friends in common, which they were all theater people. How long have you been in theater?
I've been in theater since my second year in college.
Oh, wow. Awesome.
Yes.
What was the show that got you into it?
The first show I did was Hair.
Awesome.
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome.
I actually more got into it for my theater boyfriend than anything else.
Yeah.
But then when I saw that it was Hair and I saw it was, you know, sex, drugs, rock and roll, I said, hey, I actually know this part. I'll audition for it.
Fantastic.
Wait, the sex part, the drugs part, or the rock and roll part?
Yes. Oh, yeah. You haven't seen any of my one-woman shows, have you?
No, we haven't. So do you do one-woman shows mostly now? Or
I do a whole variety of things. I'm a lighting designer. I'm a performer. I do solo storytelling shows. I'm a company member of Freshwater Theater, Wonderlust Productions, and I'm the co-artistic director of Fortune's Fool.
Wonderful.
So I do.
She also just had a baby.
What?
Yes. I have a 4-month-old who's currently, hopefully, unconscious.
But if not, there's nothing you can do about it.
That's right.
You can tell it's been 4 months since you had the baby because you didn't say like asleep peacefully, but just unconscious, like not making noise or needing anything.
Right.
just
mercifully not requiring any attention.
Right. It's not here and. Probably fine. I don't hear any crying.
Now, I have seen quite a few of Ariel's solo shows. They're very good, and the reason I actually invited her on, I wanted to bring her on, she talks in the show sometimes about her religion, or lack thereof.
Well, that saves me an embarrassing question, which is always, so let me ask you, do you believe in God?
Well, I would hopefully not be on this podcast if I did.
Oh, you never know.
We've had a few,
yeah. No, friend of the show, not. Jenny Young.
Yeah.
So you do not.
She does not.
All right.
So that's safe.
So how did that start for you? Did you grow up in a secular household?
No, I grew up actually with atheist parents, but a mother who had a lot of mental illness, and so I was kind of left on my own. And so I did spend some time dabbling in Christianity before I dabbled in many other things. I think mostly because I was looking for a parent more than anything else, and my next door neighbor told me they made great Wednesday night dinners, and, you know, spaghetti and God, these seemed like, you know, tasty things.
Someone watching over you to take care of you, which you sorely wanted.
Who also provides spaghetti. Yeah.
And that's structure.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, structure and spaghetti.
Thank you, God.
And so I used it the way that a lot of kids used it. I went to church camps and, you know, made some wallets and rode some horses and prayed to Jesus and didn't really think all that much about it other than I liked that I had a community. That's something that has always been a through line for me, is I always strive for some sort of community.
Yeah.
But then I fell out hard.
What happened?
So my mother's mental illness is called multiple personality syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. And for those of you who don't know anything about it, watch The United States of Terror. For those of you who don't care, watch The United States of Terror anyways. It's really amazing. But I had this dumbass counselor who told me that meant that my mother had demons in her. And he told me the parable of how Jesus came upon the man possessed by many pigs. And he drove the spirits from the man into the pigs and drove the pigs off a cliff and basically said that my mother had to go through an exorcism or she would never be welcome in heaven.
Oh, my God.
So, you know, I'm...
Was he like Did he have like Did he like get a degree, or was he just a dude?
He was that 18-year-old dude with pimples who's your camp counselor.
Wow. Okay. Right? Good.
Just some guy.
But he took his moment of power there, you know, and he decided that this was his opportunity to, you know, rid the world of some demons. Apparently, all he did really was rid one girl of her love for Jesus Christ. I basically said,
so
well,
thank you.
You know, if my mother's gonna go to hell, then I'm happy to go to hell, and you can go fuck yourself.
Nice.
I don't know if swearing is allowed on.
Okay,
encouraged. Favorite word is
encouraged. Yeah,
there you literally can't stop it.
Right.
Yeah. So I literally just walked.
Yeah.
I just that was that, you know. And I don't know if at that point I had completely decided that any kind of God was out of the question, but that God was out of the question.
Yeah.
And there, you know, somebody said the, you know, well, if you don't believe in God, you won't go to heaven. And I gave the argument that, well, if God is the kind of God I would want to worship, I would go to heaven no matter what. So again, you can go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
I had a similar argument with my biological father when he wanted me to keep going to church. And I said, well, why do I have to go to church? If God can hear us wherever we are, I can pray here at home. And he got all mad because of the logic of that. You know, there's no logic in cognitive dissonance. So do you feel like, so you didn't do theater in high school? Which is unusual for people who do theater.
I actually did do two church plays way back when.
Oh,
so,
wow.
So way when I was like 7 and 8 years old, I got involved in doing a couple of church plays. I know I was the mouse in Noah's Ark. I sang a solo called It Rained for 40 Days It Did.
Wow.
Was there only one mouse?
I was going to say, were you the only mouse?
I was the only mouse.
What?
Harsh.
Somehow heresy. I reproduced rapidly.
Blasphemy.
It's one of those old school asexual, like mice that just reproduce. By splitting, and
it doesn't even compute. It's like the first thing that happened is Noah screwed up. How hard is it to get two mice on a ship?
That's something that people actually strive.
Shit, bring 20 mice. I mean, why? They're small.
You shouldn't have to invite them. They're just going to show up anyway.
How much of a like a sea ship captain's job is trying to keep mice from getting on the ship?
Yeah.
Like, you know, stowing away and eating all your grain reserves or hardtack or whatever it is that, I don't know, Noah's Ark would have had. Like they couldn't do what, I don't know, like...
They ate God's love, Nick. They ate God's love.
Noah's Ark either had grain reserves
or hardtack.
Those
love.
Are the only two options. It was either grain reserves or hardtack
on
Noah's Ark.
And lime so that the mouse didn't get scurvy.
Right. Very small lines.
Yeah, just a little tiny line. It's key line. So Ariel, so you did Hair. And that was a musical, I'm guessing.
Yes.
You know, not some weird play version of Hair.
Probably is one of those.
Did you keep doing musicals? Or
No. I'm not a particularly great singer. I was not cast for my singing nor my dancing skills.
Okay.
I was cast because I worked at the Hard Times Cafe and therefore could bring an air of authenticity to the show.
Very bohemian.
Yes, I was actually asked to bring in books and give lectures, and they painted quotes that I wrote on the stage.
Of course they did.
Yeah, and then I had to be the first person to get naked.
And then everybody else went on to form Cloud Cult.
Right.
So you listed a long list of things you do in the theater, you know, and everything from, you know, tech and directing and acting and actually performance. Do you have a hard time, you know, balancing that with outside interests, family, you know, anything else that you, any other pursuits, or is theater all you really focus on besides your family?
You know, I think a lot of my other pursuits are just very personal, so they don't take up a lot of time. Like, I'm a reader. I'm an avid reader. Huh. So I do that whenever there's time to slot that in.
Sure.
Are you
full-time professional doing all the theater stuff? No other job? No other side work?
Well, I just quit my job.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah.
Thank you. Up until then, though, I worked a day job working with people with developmental disabilities, helping them get jobs out in the world, training them on how to do the jobs, that sort of thing. And I actually got it because I was told that my 4-year theater degree qualified me to work in the field, which I thought was really interesting and actually kind of cool.
That is kind of cool.
It's about interaction, reaction, improv to a certain extent.
Yeah,
sure.
So, you know, I did that during the day and did theater at night. And no, I haven't found that it's gotten in the way of anything else.
Well, that's wonderful. Yeah. I feel like a lot of times what people who aren't in theater, even people maybe who have left theater, the perception is that it takes up so much of your time that you can't do that and other things, that you know, or you can only do the one thing. like maybe you can act in a show, you know, but you can't do all the other pursuits you might have. So
Now that I have a child, I'm about to find that.
Yeah.
Exciting though. I mean, this to be on like the precipice of finding out, you know, how it's gonna go.
But I like to be busy. I'm a person who likes to be active and be busy all the time. So really the thing I needed the most was a partner who said, yeah, go do that thing. I'm an introvert. I'll hang out over here and watch Chef's Table or something.
Yeah. And take care of the little one now and hold the loaf of bread while and until it walks. I like when babies are at the age where like they just mostly are stationary and then all of a sudden they start moving and I feel like everything levels up for everyone. My nephew just started like running around.
I'm really glad I never thought of my kids as a loaf of bread because I like bread a lot.
And you don't like your kids, well, you monster.
I like my kids, but I never wanted to take a bite out of their forehead.
She means,
I don't
like,
believe you.
You know, not ambulatory. Like you set them down somewhere and they stay there, like a cup of coffee.
They stay where you put them.
That's not true. In my case, I think my kid is attempting to take after me because at 4 months she's trying to walk.
Oh,
she's not
interested
in sitting. Yeah. She's not interested in toys. She just wants to stand and walk.
Oh, man. She wants to be busy, too.
Yeah. And let me tell you, a walking loaf of bread would freak my shit right out.
Ariel, what
if... that means sandwiches that would self-deliver, Tim.
Ooh.
All right, I'm starting to like, yeah, you know, that's a good point. I'm liking the idea.
And just
you
as long as...
You have to have lots of them so you can keep...
Right, and just as long as like they don't try to unionize, it'll change Jimmy John's. Like, this.
All right. So one of my friends asked me this question, and she said this is a great question for everyone in theater, and I would love to know what you think. All right, what's one play that you wish you could direct, and what's one play that you wish no one would ever direct again? And think about it.
So if there's a play I wish I could direct, I will never be allowed to direct it for multiple reasons. But I would really love to direct For Colored Girls Who Considered Suicide When the Rainbow Is Enough.
Sure.
It's just a beautiful piece of poetry. It's something I've never seen done the way I would love to see it done. But obviously there are 5 gazillion reasons I can never direct this play. God, there are so many plays we don't
All directors
need.
Matter.
There's so many plays we don't need.
Half of Ibsen, I just don't. I don't think we need most Gilbert and Sullivan. I'm really not sure. I'm sorry.
Half of Ibsen, is that like all?
So philosophical.
Yeah. Wow, Tim's so deep.
I guess I'm gonna go with The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas.
Nice. Oh, that's all right, a good choice. Yeah, like we've seen it. It's done.
Yeah.
We don't need more interpretations of it.
There's only how many different ways do you interpret? The way we interpret Shakespeare, and I love one of the things I've always enjoyed about theater is, you know, Shakespeare is always produced, so everybody's trying to figure out, well, how do I do Romeo and Juliet in a way that nobody has ever done Romeo and Juliet?
Yeah,
before.
Right.
And you know, in 500
every high
years.
School senior is like, I've got this. I'll bring something new to the world.
In 500 years, they will be doing The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas the same exact goddamn way. They won't be like, let's do a post-apocalyptic Best Little Whorehouse in Texas.
Although.
See, I see that production.
No, I'm
But it's never going to happen. Nobody's ever going to do it.
What if they're all robots?
Sex, Bette's Little Whorehouse in Texas.
Just like a month or two ago, Theater La Tirada did Gypsy at the Pantages. I do some box office work there and at the State. And so this dude came up with a card, like a business card, to the box office window. And he's like, hey, I represent an actual gypsy story fortune teller you guys should pay her to come like warm up the crowd before Gypsy because he doesn't know what Gypsy is about at all. And he's like, and so he hands me this business card that I still have at home that is great. It's like,
he hands the atheist skeptic a business card about a fortune teller who's really going to help everybody.
Yeah. Atheist skeptic theater nerd. Who's like, let me tell you something about Gypsy and like,
guess what? There's
and my psychic friend, I'm like, oh, how many strikes can you get in one sentence? And so his idea was, you want to talk to the house manager to get his psychic gypsy friend
who was not a prostitute at all, which was very confusing.
To come in and warm up the crowd
for theater
before Gypsy,
a Broadway show.
Which is maybe Little Whorehouse in Texas should have been his.
So maybe your next one woman show, we could give you guys this guy's card. He can help you.
If you need someone to warm up your audience, I know a real gypsy psychic.
Who, well, you know, you
I
know
dare
her friend.
Him, I, yeah. dare right. that person to come warm up the next show I'm doing at the Minnesota Fringe Festival.
What's that? Show? Yeah, what's the show?
I'm doing the Abortion Chronicles.
Oh,
Fringe and abortion. You know, totally.
Yeah. Oh man, that sounds right. awesome.
Yeah.
I worked at an abortion clinic, and I worked at Planned Parenthood in Near North in Chicago for a year, and it was very fulfilling, rewarding, and stressful work. But I love abortion. I'm on board. I want to come see it.
Excellent.
It's gonna be like 60 minutes of abortion stories.
Hopefully, it will be a little less dour than that.
Okay.
But we are collecting stories from people. We're also meeting with people who run different clinics throughout town. We're also going to add some historical elements.
Awesome.
Ruth Verkus is going to be our dramaturg for the show. And so we're collecting stories. And we've got stuff right now that's coming in from 1969 and 41 and
now.
And, you know, I don't exactly know exactly what shape it's going to take, but we're going to have a rather large cast. And
that's fantastic.
That's exciting. Yeah. That sounds great. We have a friend of the show, Brianne Bilyeu, she's an escort at a clinic.
At Planned Parenthood.
At Planned Parenthood. Not like on
Jesus
the corner.
Christ.
Yeah. Gotta be careful with that one.
Now there's anything wrong with that.
She's a Planned Parenthood escort, and she helps train people to deal with the barrage of protesters and just how loud and uncivil they can be.
When I was younger, I actually would be the decoy.
Mm.
So I'd be the person in the middle. And the person who's actually getting the procedure would be on the outside so that everything hateful would be yelled at me.
Like
so
you were,
just
yeah.
kind of deflect off
yep.
her
yeah.
just slightly.
Yeah, oh, that's
man.
Great. Yeah. It was very shocking to me how many security measures we had to take because the receptionist was behind bulletproof glass in a room with just one door that had a key code to get in or out of that little booth area. And then if someone came and said, I'm here for Molly Glover, and you would have to say, I don't know if she's here. And it's like, well, she had an appointment at 8 a.m. I dropped her off and I'm here to pick her up. Can you let her know? And be like, I can't confirm or deny that anyone's there because, well-meaning people would pretend to come like looking for a patient when they didn't have any well-meaning intentions at all.
Yeah, and not to get us too far off the track, but
yeah.
I actually have to say that in contrast to that, the last procedure that I had, I went and there was one guy outside protesting.
Really?
Just this one kind of sad, quiet old man. And
close.
Like, I'm the kind of person who goes in, checks in, and goes out for a cigarette.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm
yeah.
like just
you gotta
standing.
Wait. You got
right?
time.
You got time. And so I also brought two people with that hated each other. So I just kind of left them in the lobby and went outside. And so
like
I'm standing outside and there's just this one guy with his little sign and he's just kind of looking at me with his like sad little face. And I weirdly loved him in that moment.
Well, he's committed.
Yeah.
He's really
a bit.
You want to go like help him out a little and be like, do you want to call me a whore? Can I get you some water? Am I a slut?
Like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I have no idea what to do.
Yeah, I'm feeling so conflicted. If only there was someone to tell me what to do. Like, just like throw him a bone. I'm just kidding, buddy. I was gonna do it anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. Throw your cigarette at him and you go inside.
No. I'm sure. I know. I'm fine.
I don't know. Do you guys have other questions?
Well,
I
know one thing. When we were talking before you came on the show, and actually, it's your earrings that are reminding me of it because you've got Stonehenge earrings.
Nice.
On.
I do. I like to go to like big monuments and get the nerdiest jewelry I can.
No,
awesome.
Going to big monuments and getting little copies of them. I mean, isn't that the greatest
yeah.
thing ever?
Yeah.
Then when people look at the little copies, you're like, I saw the real thing.
It was really bummed that I couldn't find a tiny Taj Mahal.
Oh.
Like, apparently they can't fit that into an earring.
They could totally fit that into an earring. That's messed up. So
anything could be turned into an earring, really. I mean,
if you have the gumption.
Yeah. Why couldn't it be an earring? I don't get it.
I don't know.
Should we call India?
Get them on the phone, Molly. I want answers.
Just somebody break their computer and
yeah.
we can get India on the
Hack
phone.
The
no
planet.
Problem. So, all right, anyway.
Oh.
Oh, oh, yeah, all right. So, one of the things that I thought was interesting, and it's something that we all have in common, you said you had a pagan phase.
Oh. Yes, I had a very awkward pagan face.
But I don't know.
I didn't know exactly.
I don't think
paganism.
There's a non-awkward pagan face.
So I went to this really alternative school, and it was very punk rock, homeschooled, very strange little place. And so after my little bout with God, I was like, well, what do I do? I want some sort of spirituality. I'm still sort of looking for a parent. And I looked around my school, and we had this whole series of intense punk rock female Kali worshiping women. Right? These
Kali, wow.
Kali. With these women, man. Yeah. These women were rough.
Kali like, Ma.
Okay. Yes, there was a lot of that. There was a lot of worshiping at the Temple of the Psychic Sluts. That was their thing, right? And they're actually amazing performers, but they scared the living shit out of me. So I was like, okay, that's cool. Goddesses are cool, but that's a little much for me. But I didn't really have any other handbook. I mean, someone had given me a copy of the Fifth Sacred Thing, and I had a copy of the Chalice and the Blade, When God Was a Woman, but I didn't actually read them. I just put them on my shelf so that it looked like I knew something.
Like, yeah, cool, Chalice,
so wait. I decided I was going to believe in the goddess, which mostly meant tripping a lot and laying my head on the grass and saying, I love you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sort of I totally worshiped the goddess for like a couple years in college. Like,
I worshiped the goddess 3.5 times.
I went to a festival in Wisconsin where I worshiped the goddess for like 56 hours.
I said a lot of blessed bees.
Oh, yeah.
I listened for heartbeats and trees.
As above, so below.
I didn't really know what I was kind of fumbling in the dark. And I found myself kind of coming down to the core thought of mama. A lot of the time, and just sort of searching for this idea of a universal mother.
At the time, do you feel like, at the time, did you have the distance from yourself to be aware that that's what you were looking for? Or did that only come after, you know, reaching adulthood and kind of looking back and realizing what the impetus for all that was?
I think I knew some of it. I was a pretty self-aware kid, but I wanted to believe in some sort of, I don't know, Gaia or spirit or something.
Mm-hmm.
And if I was going to believe in that, why not see it as the sacred feminine? Because there was something incredibly beautiful about that idea.
Yeah.
Even if it wasn't a thing that I could even fully convince myself was real, I loved the idea of it.
I had that same thing with the idea of there being like Greek and Roman, the smaller gods, the god for everything, a god for every occasion. Like whatever you need to pray about, there's a guy whose whole, or girl whose whole thing is that. You know, like you picture that deity and that's where you go. And so my Wiccan phase was, you know, like the rest of my life, you know, solitary. And it wasn't until I was shamed on a Citadel BBS by other pagans for not having a coven. And was told that that meant I wasn't actually a Wiccan, and that solitary Wiccans were just people who liked books. And I was like,
nerd.
I know, my life.
And I was like, oh, okay. And they're like, do you even have a pagan name given to you from skyclad ceremonies? And I'm like, no.
It's Psylocke.
And they're like, yeah. And they're like, oh, well, then good luck with your journey. And it was just so like, and I was like, this is exactly what I didn't want in Christianity. This like snotty,
cultist,
you're not close enough to God bullshit. Like,
I Wiccan better than you Wiccan.
You Wiccan, exactly.
I just wonder how many people who have found their way from Christianity to atheism and kind of reasoned their way there. I wonder how many of us stopped at paganism, because it's something all four of us have in common.
Yeah.
My pagan phase was more the weird crystal, because it was the 90s, so it was the weird.
And you worked at the Renaissance Festival.
Yeah, I did. So it's
no, it matters.
It does. It really does.
It's a lot of crystals and shit out there.
When I married someone from the Renaissance Festival, I almost went back to paganism.
Right?
Actually.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was the crystals and like the tarot cards and reading books by Aleister Crowley, which I gotta tell you,
he's a
boring
dick.
As fuck.
Yeah, God. Well, they Spiral are, Dance isn't a treat either, Tim. Like, none of the books are really thrilling. I don't know.
The books are really boring. I could never get through them. So.
Yeah.
But I like did tarot readings and I believed in palmistry and all that stuff. And that was the stuff that kind of appealed to me, because it wasn't this all-powerful godhead figure that was controlling everything, which really made me uncomfortable. It didn't make sense. It wasn't that it was like awful. It was that it was illogical. It didn't make, when given all the evidence, one god did not fit the evidence. So the only option really was multiple gods. Maybe if there were a whole lot of them, you could get it all to work. And it, to me, paganism was this step of logicking through everything to go, okay, this one story that I've been presented doesn't make sense, so let me try this other story and see if I can find a way to get that story to make sense. And I don't know. I mean, was that part of where you were, or is that totally different?
I think so, much in the same way that if you're kind of figuring out your own like spiritual, like mother worshiping, like the very inherently feminine part of that, I feel like for me it was more inherently masculine, even though there were plenty of women there, and you know, strong women and like well respected and involved. It was more Asatru, like you know, Vikings and stumbling
and
yeah, and it was like more community, more like the people that were there. There was an older guy there, a good friend of mine, Dave, who's since passed away, but he was like an older guy, kind of a father figure type guy, definitely. And that was comfortable. That was something that I was lacking and maybe needed. And you know, I shingled a roof with him, and like, you know, we drank mead and toasted gods and told stories and boasted and bragged. And it was definitely felt like a very I don't want to say like broing out and have people's imaginations immediately jump to like frat boys, but it was like non-destructively, very positively masculine.
Yeah.
For sure. And I, that was something that I didn't have a ton of in my life. All my friends were women before then, really, and my house was all women.
Yeah.
And so I think maybe that was like me trying to fix what I needed. You know, it just kind of makes sense. And now I don't need that.
Did you, Ariel, attempt, because this is something I did a lot, did you attempt astral projection when you were a pagan? Did you do any of that kind of stuff?
I did that thing where you scry, where you like look in a water bottle and you attempt to have a spirit speak through you. And what's kind of fascinating about it is I didn't actually, you know, again, I tend to be really self-aware, so I didn't really believe that I was doing it until I had a Christian watch me do it.
Oh.
And he was so utterly convinced by it. And this was like the truest, purest Christian I have ever met. And somehow, I think he was in love with me, I managed to drag him onto my porch and get him to watch me do this whole ritual. And it scared me so much that he believed it so strongly did it again.
I had a boyfriend who told me he astrally projected, and that he was under attack because he, in his astral projections, was a dragon, and he was under attack by another dragon who he didn't know who it was, and he talked about it enough that I tried to astrally project to protect him, and then when it didn't work, I lied, and I said that I did astrally project, and that I saw his dragon enemy. And that next time I was going to try to follow him back into his body, and I never worked. And I part of me always wonders if he broke up with me because of that, like because I wasn't able to save him from his dragon enemy in the astral plane.
So I'm struck by the fact.
God, Molly.
But probably
I'm learning. You are a horrible person.
It's probably just because I'm super annoying.
I can't help it though. When I hear that this guy was a dragon, I always think about that thing where people are reincarnated as Queen Elizabeth. Like, of course he's a dragon.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
He's not just, you know, a little gecko or something.
No. Yeah, he's a dragon. Of course he is. He's powerful and masculine.
Like, hey, buddy, I got a secret for you. The other dragon is also you.
I remember, I mean, I did tarot readings all the time. I still have a shit ton of tarot cards because I mean, I liked the art.
Me
I liked
too.
The symbolism.
Sure.
I thought they were cool. And I didn't even know what cold reading was.
Oh.
But I was really good at it.
Yeah.
I was really good at it because it wasn't until later that I was like, it occurred to me that it's like, these cards don't tell me shit.
Yeah.
They don't tell me anything. All I do is I start fumbling around with, you know, I read, I don't know, 20, 30 books on interpretation of tarot cards.
Position
and I would,
and I would
and I would look at it and I would be like, okay, well, this book tells me that this means this. And I'd look at the picture and go, what does this picture suggest to me? And then I just start fumbling around until you get that look in somebody's eye that's like, ah, aha, there we go. Got it. And it didn't even occur to me that's what I was doing. It's like looking back at it later, it's so obvious that I was just
reading the person.
Reading the person and interpreting the cards based on what the person was giving me.
Nick and I have a secret code for when one of us dies, if any person tries to tell us, a medium tries to tell us that they can talk to the other one. So if someone comes up to him and is like, I can help you communicate with your
dead
wife.
We have a ghost seance safe word.
We have a ghost seance safe word. So that then he'll ask the question. And if she can, if she's the real deal and she can actually talk to me, she'll be able to do the answer. But it's impossible to cold read it. It yeah. isn't, because it's a nonsensical answer question combination. We've never told anyone, and we're not telling you now.
It's a huge in joke.
Only
us.
We know it. Yeah. Literally, I've never even said it out loud to anybody else, just in case.
Up until this time, I've never even mentioned that we have
such
a thing.
I know. I'm taking a chance on that.
So, all you psychics listening in on our podcast,
wait for one of us
that
to
you
die.
Cash in on the Glovers once one of them passes away. Fuck you.
You probably think it's going to be Nick, but it'll be me. I'm very accident prone.
Yeah, it's Nick.
I am.
Nick's going to die of a heart attack, but Molly's going to die falling off a curb.
Or I'll get murdered.
Yeah.
Someone will murder me.
By a curb.
By a dragon on the actual plane.
Oh. Irony. You thwarted me once, but I return.
She died of a broken heart.
Oh, fighting dragons.
I know.
Yeah, are you going to die, Ariel?
Yeah. Did the scrying bowl tell you?
I'm probably going to be chasing my child away from some piece of lighting equipment and electrocute myself.
Oh. I know that I'm going to die falling down the stairs.
Really?
Because I almost fall down the stairs pretty much daily. Pretty much daily, I almost fall down the stairs.
Cats and kids leaving stuff and just general
and just the
feet.
Fact that we have slippery wooden stairs. I insist on going down the stairs in my stocking feet.
Your greatest enemy is gravity and his sidekick, an incline.
Yes. I know a lot of people think, I know a lot of people are really, really fans of an incline plane, but to me, it's like a death trap.
It's like the worst simple machine as far as you're concerned. Yeah. Simple machine, dickhole machine.
No.
You know
what?
People think it's a screw, but that's just an incline plane on a wheel.
The best invention ever was an elevator.
The pulleys, lift and pulley. That's
lift and pulleys, yeah, that's what I want.
So
I want
to haul you up.
So if you died in trying to save your child from some lighting equipment, then I like to think that like what would happen next is some sort of Jungle Book scenario where she is raised by the theater itself. And, like, she's like swinging from the lighting and like
she's up in the catwalk.
Yeah,
some it's like sort Phantom, of, like, but she's
stealing
not
food from the green room.
Yeah, yeah. She's like, oh, that's
she's the ghost of Harrenhal.
Okay, so that in that scenario, who's Shere Khan? I want to know because if it's Jungle Book, there's somebody in the theater that's trying to kill her.
The prop master, because she keeps touching stuff that isn't hers.
There's a tape circle on this table, and it says ball. Who's it? Yeah. Who took it?
Is it your ball? Then why are you touching it? Yeah, it's totally the prop master, not prop mistress. They're just hunting her down like a like
either
a dude on safari in a pith helmet.
The spotlight, because she just comes running by and grabs it and goes wee.
Oh yeah, resets all the lighting every time she swings through and changes everything.
Yeah.
So all right. So I mean, I know it's hard to pick favorites, but if you had to just on the spot, what's your favorite show you've ever worked on? Regardless of what you did in the show, but also tell us what you did.
Oh, good Lord.
But we don't
really
care.
Hard.
We want to be really clear. It's not important what you did.
And it can be for any reason, too. Yeah, yeah. It was just a good experience.
Okay, well, I'm going to give the selfish reason because it's sort of the thing that drove me really back into theater and also reconnected me to Duck Washington, who's somewhere in this building.
Friend of the show, Duck Washington.
The first show that I did out of college, other than a piece that I directed and toured, was a production of King Lear.
Hmm.
And I had a tiny, tiny bit part, and I had pretty much given up on theater. I thought, oh, that was my college pursuit, and I don't care. Oh, Duck Washington's directing a play. Oh, I like
because you've been roommates, right?
No,
not yet.
No, he had worked on Hair, and he was he was best friends with a guy that I dated for quite a while. So we were friends throughout college, and so I saw that he was directing, and I thought, well, maybe I'll give this theater thing one more go. And so I went out and I auditioned, and Dom Krasnowski was in it as well.
Oh,
and,
wow.
I had like 5 lines, but everybody I was involved with decided we needed to make these elaborate backstories. So it was we put so much effort into these tiny, tiny tiny parts. And, you know, since then I really haven't minded picking up a role that's really small, because I think, I don't know who I'm working with yet, and they might be really, really fun.
Mm-hmm.
And we might get to sit backstage for 2.5 hours out of the 3-hour show and make up these elaborate stories, and that's almost as much fun as being on stage.
Wow, that's awesome. Great. You just described working at the Minnesota Renaissance Festival.
No, really, it is.
Kind of.
You just sit around backstage and make up elaborate backstories.
Or on stage, really.
Yeah.
And you say like 5 lines to the audience. So it's pretty much exactly the same thing.
So conversely, what is one of the more difficult things you've had to work through, or like what, or even if you don't want to get into specifics, what do you think is something that is one of the more difficult things in a show that
an obstacle?
I think
when a director has such an intensely certain idea of how the play should go.
Mm.
And it doesn't matter if I'm the lighting designer, if I'm a performer, or what I'm doing on the show. If their vision is so narrow and so tight that nobody's got any room to breathe, A, it's going to be boring as fuck.
Yeah.
You just know you're going to see that show and kind of like... Because nobody's alive on stage. Nothing's happening that's interesting.
Right.
Because the only person who owns anything in the show is the director.
Absolutely.
Everybody else is just working towards the director's vision, and they don't have any personal investment in the show besides, I'm in this show.
Right.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I went to St. Kate's, and I have a theater degree as well, and because we were a joint department with University of St. Thomas at the time, I don't know if it still is, because, you know, historically, St. Thomas was all boys and St. Kate's was all girls, so the only way they could actually put on any shows was that they worked together. So I had a couple of directors that did something like that, where it was just, I had a director actually get on stage for both parts of a scene and be like, okay, so then you do this, and like said the lines and said, and then your response should look like this. And we were only like 20, but it was just like, this is ridiculous. How are we supposed to? And to me, that is always how religion felt. It is this idea that someone is telling you, you know, it's this really narrow vision of how things are supposed to be and how you have to act and believe. And there's no room to be yourself. And if you try, it's sin or it's immoral or, you know, and I don't know. I think that's. They're similar to me.
You know what I was just thinking while you're describing that is that last Coen Brothers movie, and I'm forgetting the name right now, but the scene where Ralph Fiennes is trying to get the actor to say, "Would that it were so simple."
Would that it were so simple.
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 Hail Caesar.
Yeah. Hail Caesar. There you go. Thank you. So I don't know. I was just thinking about that. Mm-hmm. That director trying to get the guy to say the line a specific way. It must be said like this.
Yep.
That does takes the joy out of a.
I've never directed, except for, I've directed like a monthly variety show, but that's just putting acts together more.
I've directed myself. I haven't directed as much as I've done some other things, but for me, directing is having a loose vision, finding out what the actors are really good at, and encouraging that.
Yeah.
Saying, okay, that can fit into my vision, so I'm going to expand on what they already have a skill in. Like, you're looking for what they've got.
It's like being a good manager.
Is what people are going to see.
It is being a good manager. It is literally project management. And on top of that, I always have felt like, you know, I've directed a fair bit, and it's like you cast someone for a reason. Not because they read the lines exactly the way you had in mind, but because they made you notice. And why? And use that. Don't try to shoehorn everything.
Interesting.
Excellent. Well, thank you. Are you ready? It's time for 5 questions.
I'm ready for five.
Five questions.
All right.
A 5 questions theme.
What? Someday. That's not perfect? Wow.
Someday.
Wow. Right. Narrow vision. All right.
Question.
Tim, why don't you start us off?
Question number one. What is a movie that you will stop and watch anytime it's on? And by that, we mean just, you know, it's a movie that you just kind of fall into comfortably.
Okay, so I don't watch television really at all. And even if I did, I don't really watch the movies that come on television. So we're just going to play a game called This Movie Would Be on Television.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
you would watch
it. And funny enough, it fits the religious theme. I would watch Saved. Any day.
Oh my God!
Any day.
Yeah.
My
Jesus,
pussy
and I love you.
Is a hot pussy.
Oh my
just
God!
The best.
The throwing the Bible and hitting her in the back of the head.
Yeah.
And Macaulay Culkin.
Oh my God!
He's
really good.
Brilliant in it.
That's a beautiful movie.
Yeah, I like that.
All right.
Question number two. What is your geekiest or most prized possession?
Well, and it might be prized only to me, but I have a whole series of things signed by Sophie Aldred, who is Ace in Doctor Who.
Oh, yeah.
She was
awesome.
I love Ace.
And the one that I prized the most I got when I was like 16 years old when the show was still going. A friend of mine went and saw the filming of Ghostlight and brought me home a card signed to me and all of that.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So Jeremy Stomberg cast me in a closing ceremonies video for Convergence. That was the an Avengers parody where I had to play Ace, but I'd never seen Ace, and so they forgot my bat when we filmed it, so I just had my fists. It was really awful. And then I realized later that Sophie Aldred was a guest of honor that year.
Yeah.
So it was like, oh, great. So Sophie Aldred saw me be Ace without a baseball bat and a terrible British accent.
You could have been holding an explosive or something.
Did you at least have a can of hairspray?
No, I literally just had fists and was like, rawr.
Ace is
That's all right.
Favorite.
For Convergence this year, I actually went as Ace from a very specific episode, so everybody just kept saying, are you an army nurse? I don't know.
Oh.
Oh, you out-nerded the nerds. That's so great.
One 50-year-old guy was like, Curse of Fenric.
Oh, that's worth it then. If one guy gets it, it's all
that's
worth
a, that's
it.
That's all that matters.
Yeah.
That's the best.
Just the one guy.
All right, question number three is, which supernatural being, deity, or force do you wish were real?
You know, I had a lot of trouble coming up with this one. When I started talking about paganism, I guess I just kind of came back to the idea that I wish that the goddess was real.
Yeah.
I think that we all need a mother right now really, really badly.
If for nothing else, to send some of us to our rooms.
Right? Everybody, and spank them all.
Yeah. I can think of a few people who need to go to bed without dinner.
Yeah, it's amazing. We've been doing that question for about a year now since we went over to the new five questions. And that is now the second time we've gotten that answer. And it's the second time in a row.
Today.
Yeah. The second time in a row we've gotten that answer.
It would always be something like, oh, I wish Jedi Knights were real. Or you know. But I kept trying to find a funny answer, and I went with the true answer.
I like that.
Yeah, that's better. No,
the true answer is always good.
Honesty is fine. Okay. Question number four. Let's say for a moment that all religion is gone. What is the biggest problem that now faces humanity?
I would say it's all the isms. The sexism, homophobia, you know, racism, all of that. Although without religion, they might not be as fueled as they are. I think that religion feeds a lot of those fires, but I think that's the biggest problem.
I agree with that.
Yeah. It's discrimination of some sort.
Tribalism, really. The sense of the other, us versus them, you know, and separating everybody. Yeah.
People not like me are scary.
Yes.
They are dangerous.
Question.
Let's be crushed.
I'll crush them with my powerful arms. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know why you sound like a Steve Reeves Hercules. Pick up that rock, Hercules. I could not pick up that rock. That rock is far too large.
Question number five.
I think that's what humanity would be like without religion.
Show me what you've got.
I've been asking this question for about a year. I've had time to think it over. That's what non-religious humans would sound like.
Word.
Sure. Question number five is, what is your favorite quote?
I had to go with Rumi. I had to go with, out beyond the ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, there is a field. I'll meet you there. Where the soul lies down in that grass, the world is too full to talk about.
I like that.
That's
like
very
Rumi.
Contemplative.
It is contemplative. Good
well,
word.
Well, I think after I gave up on the notion of any specific religion, I still held on to a sense of spiritual self or a sense of beauty, if you
romance.
Will.
Romance.
Yeah, I am a romantic with the world. Mm-hmm. As much as I'm a cynic about things going on in the world, I'm a romantic for the world.
I genuinely do think that most cynics are romantics at heart, and that's what drives them to cynicism, is because they see the beauty in the world, and they know that things are worth more than what we get, and that's what makes them cynical. I don't know.
Or that it's fleeting.
Yeah.
I think
the impermanence of beauty.
I think cynics are aware of perfection to an extent that it frustrates them when it's not achieved.
Yeah.
Sure.
No, absolutely.
I see what we could be.
Right.
Yeah. It breaks my heart.
Yeah.
Well, you know what's really great is a comedy marathon. And
that was right.
Yeah, no, this is great.
Right? I thought that'd be really funny.
I think that we should all,
luckily.
luckily, that's all the time we have.
Hold on,
I'm going somewhere.
I was just
going to
hand out Kleenex.
I was going to say, and because that's all the time we have, we now have a few moments to navel gaze and really like just focus on our spiritual astral dragons.
Soak it in.
Yeah, I want everyone to know that I'm an astral ferret. I feel like that's what I would be on the astral plane because it's annoying and it smells weird, and only that friend of yours that you don't really get has one.
I think if I was an astral animal, I would be an otter because otters clearly love water slides.
Fair enough, yes. Nick, what would your astral animal be on the
polar
plane?
Bear.
Polar bear?
Polar bear, absolutely.
Because you hate penguins?
It's not so much that I hate them, it's I love to kill them.
Oh,
but,
all right.
I think I can sympathize with like being bred for the cold weather and like really
and
reveling
sleeping.
In it and sleeping and like... Like shambling along in your big self, like I did that.
Ariel, what would your spirit?
You know, I think I'm gonna have to go with the mouse.
Astral mouse.
Astral mouse. I like to get up in everything and kind of gnaw on it.
Yeah, you're the. No one knows that you're there, but you are. You're hearing everything. So when you're
awesome.
Sleeping,
we
so when you're sleeping tonight, remember that astral Ariel the mouse is watching you. And waiting to judge you
and
on the
astral penguins
plane.
Because I'm
just
hungry.
Just one mouse, yes. thank you so much, everyone. Give it up for Ariel Leaf. Ariel, do you have anything that you'd like to plug? Anything coming up besides your Fringe show?
Yeah, I will be doing a production of Macbeth at Chameleon Theater, directed by David Corral. I'll be the first witch.
That's awesome.
When shall we meet again?
Oh, that's awesome. When is that starting?
That opens June 3rd.
June 3rd at the Chameleon Theater. Go see Macbeth. Go see Ariel. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Ariel. We have been Geeks Without God. As always, you can find us on iTunes and Stitcher and Facebook and Twitter. We're in your mom's basement and probably over at your uncle's garage.
He's got a sled there.
He does. It's really fun. We're currently recording at Die Laughing 2016. I know it's past the time if you're listening to this podcast, but if you are watching live right now, please go and donate to Fearless Comedy Productions. They're raising money for the rest of their season. They want to be able to bring you fantastic shows.
And put a note in that you want to donate for the Geeks Without God Challenge.
You definitely want to donate for the Geeks Without God Challenge. If we can raise $1,000 by Sunday at 7 p.m., right? That's when we will go ghost hunting.
Oh, I don't want to do that.
Did you
so
smell
bad.
That? It's so spooky.
Don't cross the streams.
Yeah, all right. Thank you, everybody. We have been Geeks Without God, and we'll see you next Tuesday.
Float like a butterfly, sting like a leaf.
Lame.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
Need more Geeks Without God? Go to our website, read our blog posts, find us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter at Geeks Without God.
Social media!
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
And we'll probably say cunt a lot, because we do.